You'd think, after all we've done in their name, that the omens would help us in some way. I didn't know what to say to that, but one did not wait for my answer. She was on her feet again, moving slowly to the cracked looking glass. She stared at her reflection, then, with a ghostly hand, reached behind her head into her cropped, tangled hair, and began to untie her shroud. My body seized. What are you doing? I've waited forever to take this thing off. Her voice was harder than before, as if she was putting the last of her vigor into it. I'm starting to think if I wait for permission, it will never happen. Her courage was a gale, a bold wind. And while it stirred me, it could not dismantle 10 years of doing as I was told. I'd broken more rules in the last week than I had in a decade, but this was not one I could bear. I kept my hands in tight fists at my side and did not touch my shroud. When ones fell, silent as it hit the floor, I turned my gaze to the wall. Her gasp filled the room, soft, quiet, horror. What's happened to us? My voice shook. What? What do you see? One did not answer. When she returned to the mattress, she was wearing her shroud once more. She didn't say what she'd seen in the looking glass, and I was too afraid to ask again. The day slipped into night, and for every hour we tried to stay awake, one's shoulders sank farther. I can't remember my childhood. She rested her head on my shoulder. Everything before Aisling is so dark. She sank deeper into the mattress. Don't forget me if I disappear, Six. If you disappear, I said fiercely, I will come find you. And then we will find the others together, no matter the signs, no matter the portents. I promise. One held out her arms, and I nestled into them. We lay on our mattress, staring up at the ceiling. Talk to me. One's breath grew heavy. Tell me a story. We'll see all the hamlets, study their customs, their crafts, even their sprites. I've heard rumors of sprites as big as trees, as big as mountains. My eyelids grew burdensome. I forced them open and pinched myself until my arm was covered in bruises. It's a wild world out there, one. Strange and magnificent, and we're going to see it. Everything will be so entirely beautiful. When I opened my eyes, it was morning. I knew by the quiet, by the cold, by the balance of the mattress beneath me, that one was gone. The cottage was empty now, hollowed out. Outside, the wind wailed a sorrowful tune. My tears did not come. They were trapped somewhere within me, festering beneath a heavy surface I could not shift. When the serpentine gargoyle came to deliver more bread, I rushed to the cottage door. The gargoyle dropped the bread, caught me by the waist, and hauled me back up the stairs. I kicked, bruising my shins on stone. The gargoyle threw me down onto my bedroom floor so hard I saw stars. Shadows danced in my periphery, and the cottage grew hazy, then winked out entirely. I woke to a twilight sky. There was a small pool of blood, cold, beneath my head, where my temple had met the floor. When I pulled myself to a rickety stance and saw myself in the cracked looking glass, my cheek, my silver hair, was painted red on the left side. My visage fragmented in the broken mirror. For a moment, it looked like there were still 5 other women in the room with me, but it was merely a trick of the glass. I held my breath, lifted my hand to my shroud, ready to do what one had done, to finally see myself, and froze. No. The truth of what one had seen beneath her shroud had not saved her. Nothing had. I slammed my fist into the mirror instead, shattering the already fractured pieces. Glass rained upon the floor. I dropped onto my mattress, buried my face in the pillow that still smelled of one. Night came, the moon tossing silver light through my barred window. I watched it travel across the floor with heavy-lidded eyes, too tired to plan, too tired to cry, too tired even to sleep. The moonlight in the window disappeared, swallowed by a shadow. A moving shadow. I sat up, slowly. The shadow belonged to an object. I couldn't make it out, only that it was small. A stone, perhaps. Then, gods, I was losing my mind, because the object began to fall, and a moment later, as if the iron bars blocking my window were nothing but a suggestion, a man stepped into the room and caught it. His back was to me. His shoulders stiffened when his boots crunched over shards of the broken mirror. He stood over the blood on the floor, hissed out an exhale. I crashed into him, knocking both of us onto the floor. Glass sang and scattered. "Who are you?" I thought I heard the faintest notes of a laugh. He reared, fast and sudden, and then it was me who was falling, catapulted backward by the momentum of his body, my spine slamming onto one of the mattresses. He was on top of me in a second, pinning my wrists above my head. Dark eyes roved my face, his mouth turning in a distinct, familiar sneer. "Well, if it isn't my least favorite diviner, Rory." Chapter 9. Time to go, Diviner. The air between us tangled for one, two breaths. Then my voice was carving through the room. "You!" Rory wasn't wearing armor, just a black tunic and leathers. I could feel the drum of his heart, how it kicked up. His gaze went hard over my shroud, then harder still as it roamed over my bruised arms, the blooded side of my face. I wrenched my wrists from his grasp. "Where are they?" "Who?" "Don't play games. You are here, appearing out of nothingness, and they are gone." I was shaking. "Tell me where you've taken them." "Who?" "The diviners, you brute!" He was still bowed over me, hands braced on either side of my head, knees pressing just outside my hips. Looking up into his face felt unmistakably similar to other things that might occur upon a mattress in a darkened room. He seemed to think it too, because the corners of his mouth lifted.
"You're welcome to search me for them."
I kneed him in the groin. A chorus of curses volleyed through the room. Rory rolled off me onto the mattress, groaning into the crook of his arm. I sat up and watched him writhe. "This isn't a joke, Mendacious. Do I look like I'm fucking laughing? Just..." He pressed a hand over his eyes.
"Pith, I'm going to puke. Be quiet a second."
I would have purred at a spectacle like this a week ago. But the humiliation of Roderick Mendacious did little to me now. He coughed, regained himself, and looked at me with such vicious displeasure I felt it on the back of my tongue.
"So," he said, "I'm meant to have stolen 5 women, have I? Despite the fact that I've been in the siege, 10 miles away.
Yet here you are, appearing like a spectre in my room, the very place they vanished.
And wholly regretting it, I assure you." He shook his head. "Benji, the prat. I'm here because the Bleeding Heart King got a falcon from Castle Lurik. Apparently a diviner had come, demanding an audience."
His brows rose faintly.
"And that she knocked around a few drunks on the doorstep before slipping into the night."
"That was the gargoyle."
"Whatever. You made a fuss, and now I am here in the king's stead."
"So, you are an errand boy." His smirk was written in vitriol. "What about the appearing act?" I pressed, nodding at the barred window. "How did you get in here?
None of your business."
It was not lost on me that this night was embedded with secrets.
Even if he hadn't been caught stealing water from Ashling's spring, there was something about his revilement of the omens, his violation of knightly standards, that made me certain he, along with King Castor and Maud, was beyond trust. It was loud in my mind. But so was my promise to one. If you disappear, I will come find you. And then we will find the others together, no matter the signs, no matter the portents. And I would fall off the earth if that's what it took to keep that promise, even if I had to ingratiate myself with the foulest knight in all of Traum. For the diviners, I would bear it. I leaned closer. Perhaps you have a bleeding heart too, Roderick Mendacious. Perhaps you would help me leave this place. He made a face, as if sickened I had appealed to his humanity. That is why you went to Castle Lurik, to tell the king the diviners were disappearing. I nodded. What does the abbess say about it?
That they ran away.
Did they disappear one by one or all at once?
You ask a lot of questions.
I'm revoltingly curious.
I exhaled through flared nostrils. One by one, and always while we slept in this room.
Has anyone been dispatched to search for them?
One gargoyle per diviner.
Did you see anything? Anyone suspicious?
Besides you, no. His eyes narrowed.
Who broke the mirror?
I did.
Why are your arms bruised?
I've been pinching myself to stay awake.
Rory's voice went rough. And the blood?
His hand came up slowly, a phantom through my hair, pushing it away from my swollen left temple.
This?
Gargoyle.
Right.
He exhaled and got off the mattress, fiddling with something in his pocket. Rory muttered to himself a whole 30 seconds before he said, swift and sure,
"Get your things."
I don't have anything. That, of all I'd said, seemed to shock him the most. Rory's eyes went wide, mouth twisting, like I'd served him a plate of hot manure and called it a feast.
You don't have anything.
I gestured at my dirty dress. Just my clothes. He was muttering to himself again.
Tell me at least you have something for your feet.
Like what?
Like what? Like shoes, you twit. Boots, slippers, clogs fashioned by your stupid chisel. Anything.
My hammer and chisel. I snapped my fingers in his face. There are some things, actually. They're kept outside. I moved to step off the bed.
Rory lurched forward, bracing my hips.
What are you—
Don't kick me. I'm trying to help you.
He nodded at the floor, moonlight kissing over thousands of shards of glass.
Unless you'd rather rip your feet to tatters.
I nodded my consent tersely, and his hands tightened around me. I'm heavy, I said, before he lifted me. It wasn't an apology.
No one's as strong as you, is that it, Diviner?
Put you on your back at Coulson Fair easy enough, didn't I? That got a smile out of him. A moment later I was in the air, slung over his shoulder like a dead deer. I swore, and he chuckled, glass crunching beneath his boots as he moved through the room.
Threw you on that bed easy enough, too, he murmured.
The cottage door was no longer guarded by a gargoyle. Rory slammed against it once, twice, thrice, to no avail. I donned my cloak, gloating from the shadows.
Fucking Ashling.
He put a hand to his bruised side.
All right, new plan. Shut your eyes.
Not a chance. What for?
I'm going to use a tool which, as previously stated, is none of your business.
What kind of tool? I'm revoltingly curious. He bit the inside of his cheek, glanced at the door, then reached into his pocket.
We are going to disappear for about 3 seconds, and in that time, we'll be able to pass through the door. Curiosity sated?
Not by half. How? Rory snatched my hand, threw something from his pocket into the air.
Move.
There was a whirring sound, something small and circular passing over my head and through the door. Then Rory and I were moving after it.
I winced, bracing to collide with the wood, but my body was nothing, and I didn't feel a thing as I passed through the door, out of the cottage, into the night. Rory caught whatever he'd thrown and stowed it back in his pocket, the two of us corporeal once more. He let go of my hand like it had scorched him. I coughed. What the hell was that? None of your business, he repeated. 2 minutes later, we stood in the meager shadow of the tool shed. Rory eyed it skeptically.
You keep your shoes in here.
Shoes? I measured the shed door and reared back to face it. We're getting my hammer and chisel.
We're getting your shoes, Diviner. You can't go trudging through the kingdom like a bloody sprite, barefoot, and
I don't own shoes. I didn't own the hammer and chisel either, but that was none of his business. Just stand back. I threw myself against the shed door. There was a blunt thud, hot pain ripping up my shoulder. The door stayed shut. Rory's thumb was on his bottom lip, tracing a smile. Shut up. I picked up a stone from the path, smashed it down on the door's iron lock. Nothing. Move aside. Rory took my place at the shed, then crashed his shoulder into the door. A resonant bang echoed down the hill. The shed remained closed. What the honest fuck are these doors made of? If only we had a tool that could help us. Oh, I don't know. Move through walls? Fine. Rory reached into his pocket once more.
I say, what on earth is the racket?
The knife I didn't know Rory carried was soaring. It hit the bat-like gargoyle between his stone eyes, then dropped brusquely onto grass. The gargoyle remained cross-eyed a second, then slowly turned his gaze to me.
Did he just try to smite me, Bartholomew?
Rory's gaze jerked.
Bartholomew? That's your name?
Pith, you're thick. No, he calls everyone Bartholomew.
What the hell for?
Rory pivoted back to the gargoyle.
What the hell for?
Don't yell at him, I snapped.
Shall I break his neck?
The gargoyle asked me.
Or would you find that violence terribly ignoble?
I would. I looked up at Rory. But exceptions can be made. He glared down at me.
He's joking, right?
The gargoyle puffed out his chest.
It's my duty to protect Bartholomew against those who would harm her.
He dusted his shoulder primly.
I have a remarkable talent for violence.
Those who would harm her?
Are you serious? I'm helping her escape.
Rory pointed an accusatory finger at Aisling.
You bruise her face and keep her prisoner and drown her. Which of us is the brute, gargoyle?
That seemed to trouble him. His stone eyes roved over me.
What has happened to your face?
He blinked.
What do you mean, helping her escape?
Rory lowered his eyelids at me.
And I'm the thick one.
Be nice. I hunched to look the gargoyle in the eye. I need my hammer and chisel. Where are your keys?
My burden is always upon me.
He unfolded his blunt, claw-tipped fingers, revealing the iron ring and the keys upon it.
Though it is far too late to be working stoned, Bartholomew.
I'm not. I led him to the shed door. I'm leaving the tour. His eyes went wide, the rest of him perfectly still. For a moment, he looked like a true gargoyle, a lifeless monster carved of stone, Aisling's watchdog. But then he threw his head back and wept.
Why, Bartholomew? Why would you leave me?
Rory looked like he wanted to catapult himself out of his own skin.
Please, shut him up. He'll wake the dead.
The gargoyle's shoulders shook, his yowls near and far echoing through the night.
Oh, I have no one to talk to. No one to...
Diviner,
Rory snapped. I'm working on it. I might have put a hand over the gargoyle's mouth, but the poor thing was in such a state I feared he'd bite me. I patted his head instead, my smile too toothy to be convincing.
I care about you very much, and perhaps when I've found the other diviners, I will come back to visit.
Diviner. Rory's voice was quiet now. I turned and found him looking out at something in the darkness. There. 20 paces away, watching us from the gloom. 3 more gargoyles. The serpent, the bear, the falcon. Ahead of them, poised and still as if hewn from stone herself, the abbess. I straightened my back. I'm sorry. A tremor quickened through me. I cannot finish my term here, abbess. I am leaving Ashling tonight. The breeze answered, stirring the abbess's shroud. It is not safe for you to go, she said, beckoning with open arms. Come with me back to the cathedral, my girl. I cannot, I said again. I am leaving to find the diviners. No, Six. The abbess's words were soft, bereft of their echo outside of Ashling's cavernous body. Stay. I will take care of you. Just as you took care of the others. A desolate frost touched the abbess's voice. But I did take care of them. I made them special. They tried to be worthy of it, but they remained so human. But never you, Six. Stalwart, uncomplaining, you have ever been the perfect diviner. Her shroud rippled. Until quite recently. I flinched. She kept going. The stories you tell of the things you and the other diviners will do when you leave Ashling, the beautiful places you will go, are but the lurid imaginings of a fretful mind. You play at strength with your muscles and your martyrdom, but you wear such profound fear, my love, because deep down you know you are nothing outside these walls. You understand, better than the rest, that you will never be more useful, more powerful, more desired than you are here, upon my tour. Stay with me. It was impossible to see her eyes, but I was certain that her gaze had turned to Rory. There are terrible things in the land of Traum, with and without armor. Rory spoke as the abbess had, softly. Only his voice was coated in venom. It's true. There are terrible things in Traum. I may even be one of them. But she has asked to go, and I am bid by a code to gratify that wish. Let us leave. If you do not... He pulled something from his pocket. Well, I'd probably enjoy that. He squared his stance, the line of his shoulders hardening, and I understood, even without armor, who he was in that moment. Not the brute, but the soldier. The knight. Only the idiot wore not a single weapon upon his belt. The abbess closed her beckoning arms. Kill him, she said to the gargoyles, retreating back to the cathedral, a pale mark against darkness until the night swallowed her, and bring her to the spring. The gargoyles stalked forward. Which one, diviner? Rory's voice was deathly calm. He looked over his shoulder at me. Which one marked up your face? My teeth pressed into my bottom lip. Tell me, the serpentine one. The gargoyles lunged. Rory's visage wrinkled, then disappeared, something small sailing through the air. The gargoyles collided with one another in a vicious tangle, and Rory appeared 5 feet away, caught whatever it was he'd thrown into the air, then sent it at the serpentine gargoyle's head. And the gargoyle exploded. Stone shattered, dust and chunks of limestone cannoning in every direction. My mouth fell open. Rory shot me a pointed look. Hammer and chisel, hurry. I dove for the keys in the bat-like gargoyle's hands. Open the shed door, now. Stone fingers curled around the iron ring.
Take me with you, Bartholomew.
What?
Is my voice too quiet? He hauled in a breath, shouted in my face. Take me with you, Bartholomew. I don't want to start over again and again and watch children dream and never see beyond this place. I don't want to be in the middle of the story anymore. Please.
He wrenched open the shed door.
Take me with you.
There was no debate whether or not I had a bleeding heart. All right, fine, just stop shouting.
Huzzah!
He clapped his stone hands.
Oh, what fun! A whirlwind adventure!
The bear, Gargoyle, tackled me to the ground. We landed in the shed, the lump on my temple colliding with the hay-strewn floor. I coughed, groaned. The hammer and chisel were nestled in hay an inch from my nose. I tried to reach for them, but stone arms locked around my middle, pinning my hands to my sides. I thrashed.
Get off of me!
The bear gargoyle's grip did not loosen. It dragged me, kicking and screaming, out of the shed, through grass and toward the cathedral. Then, a ringing sound. Another explosion of limestone. I dropped to the ground. When I looked up, the bear gargoyle was headless, nothing but a jagged piece of stone, dust raining down around him. At its feet, a small object sat in the grass. A coin.
Are you all right, Bartholomew?
The bat-like gargoyle pulled me up, stretching his wings wide to shield me. I dove into the shed, yanked my hammer and chisel free. Rory was several paces away, only now he wasn't disappearing and reappearing, but skirting blows from the remaining falcon gargoyle. He rolled, barely missing a blunt swipe, then sprinted toward me, caught my waist.
Time to go, Diviner, he panted,
bending to pick up the coin. Behind him, the falcon gargoyle was getting closer, closer.
Watch out!
I shoved Rory down by his hair, just before the falcon's pointed wing collided with the back of his skull. I didn't think, I just swung. The resounding crack rolled like thunder, my hammer colliding with the falcon's face so viciously, its entire head fissured. It fell onto the grass and didn't move again. I looked down at Rory. He was on his knees in front of me, breathing hard. I let go of his hair instantly. The corners of his mouth curled. His fathomless eyes held me a second, and then he was standing to full height, offering me his hand. We ran, the bat-like gargoyle right behind us. Doors slammed in the distance, the low pulse of footsteps echoing around us. More gargoyles came from the shadows, screeching as they spilled from their outbuilding. I kept running, hammer and chisel in one hand, Rory's hand in the other. I steered us to the west side of the wall, bracing to climb. We need to be careful when we climb down.
We're not climbing.
Rory tossed his coin through the wall, and we disappeared through stone, through branches, through air. And then we were falling. Rory caught the coin mid-air, our bodies rematerializing, our feet slamming onto the road. Ugh! Pain shot up my legs. My poor knees! Rory bit down on a laugh, then pulled me by the hand down the Holloway Road, wedging us between two beech trees. We stood close together, gazes tilted up, watching the shadows of Ashling's gargoyles as they flew overhead. They passed by, and the night quieted. Rory stepped out onto the darkened road, frowning. He peered left, then right, then jerked his head at me to follow him. I looked back only once, but the hill was too steep to see Ashling. It didn't matter. I knew the cathedral was watching me, cold and beautiful and disapproving, as if to say, you'll come crawling back soon enough. Then, high in the sky, a dark shape flitted over the moon. I heard a humming sound, an off-pitch tune. I grinned. There he is. The bat-like gargoyle was there, singing to himself as he followed us from above, stone wings flapping as he soared through the air.
Rory's gaze traced my smile. He's your pet. I imagine he thinks I'm his. Funny, he's not coming along. Looks like he is. Rory muttered to himself, fidgeting with something in his left hand. I caught a proper glimpse of it before he stowed it in his pocket. The coin. The thing he'd been throwing. It was larger than a normal coin. Oblong and made of stone. One side was smooth, the other rough. I lost a step. I'd seen that exact coin before. Many, many times. But only in my dreams.
Your abbess is right, Rory called. There are terrors in Traum. Vicious sprites, and they're nothing to the nobles you'll meet. We'll join the knighthood in Siege. See what we can learn about your lost diviners.
He must have sensed I was no longer directly behind him, because he turned. He could not tell, but he was looking directly into my eyes.
Allow me the privilege of taking you to the king. The Siege. Ink. Nothing but ink and the persuasive quill can devise what is true.
Chapter 10. Young and Rather Old. Rory's horse was called Fig, and Fig's greatest flaw, or virtue, was that she refused to be rushed. She sniffed my face for 5 whole minutes before she let me sit on her back behind Rory, then took 10 minutes more snaffling boysenberries from a bramble. It was only after she'd finished, when Rory's threats had increased tenfold, that she began to idly trot down the Holloway Road. It was my first time on a horse. I hated it.
You're too rigid, Rory called over his shoulder. You're going to knock the wind out of yourself. Relax, diviner.
Relax, sure. Maybe in my next life. All I could think about was Rory's coin. The artful brigand's coin. How many times had I dreamed of it, hovering, turning this side or that, smooth side up, a good sign, rough side up, a bad portent. The omens were my life. I'd read those signs thousands of times. Still, I wasn't blind to the fact that the law of the omens, like a diviner's eyes, was shrouded. Even if they did hide in the hamlets, as the abbess said, killing sprites and swaying the fate of Traum with their magical stone objects, no one had actually met an omen. That was part of their appeal. Gods that couldn't be seen, even in dreams, were effective. You never knew when they were watching. But this was no dream. This was a coin, wholly corporeal, with the ability to destroy, to shatter stone gargoyles, or transport its users through doors, through walls. I'd never heard of magic like that in Traum. Hardly believed it. But I'd seen it. And if the artful brigand's coin lived on the other side of dreams, perhaps he did, too. Which meant Rory was... Oh, gods! The foulest knight in Traum was an omen. I nearly fell off the horse. Pith! Rory reached back, caught my thigh just below my hip, and yanked me forward.
Put your arms around my chest.
When I didn't, he took my arm and slung it over his shoulder. We rode on. Once, twice, thrice, I opened my mouth to ask about his coin, and snapped it shut every time. No, I reasoned. There must be an explanation. A coin forged to look like the artful brigands. Some magic or trickery that I, within Ashling's cloister, knew nothing about. Roderick Mendacious was many things, and two of them vital. He was a blasphemer and a mortal one at that. Flesh and blood and bone. Decidedly not a god. Better to ride along, say nothing, and see what answers awaited with the king. Overhead, the gargoyle was soaring and spinning, bidding welfare instead of farewell to the fading night. When the sky grew pink and the first fingers of sunlight made their way through the trees, I heard the rushing sound of water. Is that... are we...
The Tenor River, Rory said through a yawn.
The Holloway roads sloped, then levelled, and when the hills opened, I sucked in a breath. I'd never seen water like that. Hurried, torrid, the antithesis of the Ashling's fetid, stagnant spring. This water heaved, sang, danced. Across the Tenor, stretched out like a reaching arm, was a bridge, and beyond, a city, the Siege. Clay rooftops caught the fledgling daylight, painting the Siege a bright orange hue. Even at a distance, I could see steam from its factory pipes, water wheels turning in the river, grey banners catching the wind. The same banners that decorated the bridge at my feet. All of them depicted the same thing. A stone inkwell, brimming with black ink. Above it, the hamlet's creed was writ. Nothing but ink and the persuasive quill can devise what is true. Rory dismounted at the mouth of the bridge. A man waited there, seated in a painted stall. He wore grey robes and crooked spectacles, and held a graphite stylus over a long scroll. Eyes shut, head slumped upon his shoulder, a whistling snore rose from him, stirring the coarse ends of his beard.
Incompetence, Rory muttered.
He slipped the stylus from the man's hand, examined it, then dropped it into his pocket.
Scribe.
The man slept on.
Scribe.
The man jolted so violently he was nearly upended.
Not asleep.
He swung in his stall and blinked, staring up into Fig's nostrils. Dear me. He fumbled with his parchment, adjusting his spectacles.
How many travellers? Ugh, I seem to have misplaced my stylus. Take mine.
Rory handed the man back his own stylus and drummed his fingers along the stall.
Two travellers. Much obliged.
Letters scratched onto parchment.
Occupations?
Rory looked back at me, lip curling.
A knight and his lady.
That, I snapped, slipping from the saddle, may be the worst thing you've said of me.
That you know of. You're from Ashling.
The scribe adjusted his spectacles.
You're a diviner.
I've never seen one of you this close. His watery eyes took an inventory of me. Then he was unravelling his scroll, retrieving an inkwell from within his stall, and pouring ink upon it. He got down low, spectacles practically upon the parchment.
The ink travels fast over the scroll. A good sign, yes, diviner. And you, being here at my bridge, it's a sign from the omens that good news is coming my way, isn't it?
The appetite in his voice made me take a step back. I pulled on the hood of my cloak. Perhaps it is. He let out a long breath.
Thank you. Thank the omens.
Rory glowered at me. So you have not... I swallowed disappointment. You haven't seen any other diviners pass by this last week?
Not on my shift, I'm afraid.
Rory pulled three silver coins from his pocket, then a gold one.
You didn't see her, either.
The scribe weighed the coins in his palm, pocketed them. His eyes darted between Rory and me, then lowered to his scroll once more.
Any other goods besides the horse? For my toll?
Rory looked up, made a complaining noise in his throat.
That.
The gargoyle had dropped lower in the sky, making sweeps over the nearby hills. When he flew over us, the scribe cried out, ducking into his stall.
What kind of fowl-like sprite is that?
There was a loud crash. The gargoyle landed upon grass, sneezed, then toppled.
Did that man just call me foul, Bartholomew?
He mistook you for a bird.
An even greater slander.
The gargoyle wagged a stone finger at the scribe's stall.
I shall destroy his little house.
Oh, stop it. I took him by the shoulders, led him toward the lip of the Tenor River, as Rory haggled with the scribe. Come look at the water with me, you ferocious beast. The river held the sky and rendered it something new, its swirls and ripples metamorphosing into the most imperfect, astounding painting. I crouched and slid my hand into the water. I expected a bite of cold, but the Tenor was surprisingly tepid, and I let it wash over my skin, my calluses and knuckles, the sensation so pure, so entirely new. A blue hand reached out from the water. I drew back, splashing myself. There's something there. The gargoyle leaned over my shoulder, and the two of us watched, drawing in breath at the same time, as purple scales rose to the river's surface. The hand rose, and so did a head. Its skull was as large as a dog's, and hairless, fitted with deeply set eyes that were as pale and murky as a bowl of milk. Its snout was long, and when its purple lips parted, I was afforded a glimpse of a dozen wide, blunt teeth. Its wide eyes searched me. It made a noise that sounded like the river itself, rippling and fluid. A sprite. I smiled, put my hand into the river once more.
Careful, Bartholomew, said the gargoyle.
The sprite took my hand, coming farther out of the water. I noticed then how long and thin it was. I could see the contours of its bones, could count every rib. Hello? It stared up at me. You haven't happened to see women with these, I touched my shroud, pass by, have you? The sprite didn't answer. It was inching my hand closer to its face. Slit nostrils flared at the end of its snout, and then it was opening its mouth, guiding my hand between its teeth. It bit down. I recoiled with a yelp. The scribe rushed up behind me.
Away, you beast!
His inkwell bore fresh ink, and when he got to the edge of the river, face twisted by revulsion, he upended it into the water. Ink, dark and viscid, splashed upon the sprite's face. It let out a pained cry, then disappeared beneath the Tenor's tide. I stared after it. You hurt it.
Forgive me, diviner.
The scribe scrubbed a hand down his robes,
but the water sprites feast on pell, a plant we use to fashion our scrolls. Happily, our ink is poisonous to them. Still, they prove a persistent blight.
The gargoyle tapped his stone chin.
I wonder, if it feasts upon your precious weeds, why then should the sprite bite Bartholomew's hand?
Because it's starving.
Rory knocked into the scribe's shoulder as he came to stand beside me.
Let me see.
I kept my hand tucked against my chest. I'm fine. Rory frowned, but he didn't push it. He moved to the scribe's stall instead, wrenching a flowering grass from the ground, then marched back to the river, where he tossed the grass into the water's depths. The scribe cried out,
Pipe down! I'll pay you what it's worth. After all,
Rory reached into his pocket and extracted a gold coin, then slapped it onto the scribe's stall.
The only god of men is coin.
The creed of the artful brigand. My skin prickled. The scribe returned to his stall, muttering about Coulson Fair being inferior to the other hamlets. I glanced down at where the sprite had bitten me. A crescent moon of bruises was nestled in the heart of my palm. But the sprite's teeth had been too blunt. It hadn't broken skin, almost as if it had fought against its own nature trying to do so. The scribe watched us, pushing his spectacles up his nose, as the gargoyle and I followed Rory and Fig onto the bridge.
he said Ashling's creed with a reverent bow.
Swords and armor are nothing to stone.
Then, to Rory, don't forget your stylus. That was decent of you, I said as we walked on, rubbing my hand where I'd been bitten, feeding the sprite. Rory kept his gaze ahead.
Knights are supposed to be decent.
Could have fooled me. Violence is a craft.
So is compassion. I tend to sway toward the latter, when it comes to sprites, at least.
Folk were scarce on the bridge, the hour still early. But for every man or woman or child who passed, the gargoyle and I earned a wide-eyed stare. Some even stopped in their tracks or pointed, echoes of, "Look, a diviner!" following me across the bridge. I pulled my hood tighter over my head.
You'll need more of a disguise than that.
Rory spun the pilfered stylus between his fingers. The siege is dense, populated. There's no orderly queue like the one you're accustomed to at Ashling. People will swarm you, just like that pathetic merchant from Coulson Fair. My advice? He jerked his head at my face.
Lose the shroud. It's too distinct.
Funny. Someone once told me it made me entirely indistinct.
Two things can be true at the same time, Diviner.
Rory glowered at a passing cart, and his voice lowered.
Take it off.
No.
Why not?
No is a sufficient answer. He rubbed his face. In the light of the day, even beneath smudged charcoal, there were impressive shadows beneath Rory's eyes. I wondered when he'd last slept.
You left Ashling, he said, with the effect of a man invoking his last shred of patience. Broke a few things on your way out. If you're hoping the Abbess will take you back,
that's not why I won't take it off.
Why then?
He smiled without warmth.
What's behind it?
That was the trouble. I didn't know. The gargoyles provided us with clean shrouds when ours grew dirty, and when we washed our faces, it was with discipline, always keeping our eyes shut and away from the cracked mirror in the diviner cottage. I remembered one, searching her reflection in that same mirror 2 nights ago. Her horrified gasp. What has been done to us? I turned my head away and said nothing.
Rory muttered beneath his breath. Fine, don't take it off then. But know it will be dangerous.
Isn't that what my knightly escort is for? Besides, I have these for protection. I wagged my hammer and chisel in his face. And the gargoyle. We both looked over our shoulders. The gargoyle had taken Fig by her lead, his face close to her muzzle as he lectured her.
Never trust anything written in rhyme, Bartholomew. It is trickery, a pretty falsehood. That is something I intend to tell everyone when I pen my own book of tales. Firstly, of course, I must learn to read and write.
Rory angled his brows at me.
An army of wits, you two.
Shut up. He doesn't have much sense, or memory, or even a name. Just a strange compulsion to serve Ashling. He's a bit peculiar.
You're a pair, then?
If I told him, no, I'm not a pair, I'm one of 6, and there are 5 cracks in my heart for it, he would laugh at me. He'd remind me that the only reason I am distinct now is because there are no other diviners around to make me indistinct. I did not need a reminder of that. When the silence hung too long, Rory pivoted.
Speaking of Ashling, there's something I've been wondering. It involves you, me, my blood on your tongue, and the little matter of your dream.
My stomach tightened. What about it?
You didn't say anything in the spring. The gargoyle pulled you out after you...
He exhaled sharply.
You know, drowned. He laid you on your back upon the chancel and said you were dreaming, but you didn't breathe a word. Why is that?
The last lie I'd told was to the gargoyle, and I'd had to feign a vomiting spell to be convincing. Better to aim toward the blurry truth. I don't know why I didn't say anything. Rory's stare warmed the side of my face, dark eyes mapping my every corner, as if he could almost hear me think. I saw the 6th omen, the moth,
and horrible things have been happening ever since. I might even have said it out loud, were it not for that strange coin in his pocket. When the silence became unpalatable, Rory said, "You've been divining a while, I take it. Nearly 10 years. How old are you?"
"Bartholomew is quite old,"
the gargoyle answered behind us, drawing an idle finger through Fig's mane.
"Though, in a sense, she is prodigiously young."
"No one knows," I interrupted. "I have no memory before Ashling, but my teeth are healthy, and my skin is not so lined yet." I looked to Rory. "How old do I look to you?"
"If I answer badly, are you going to pulverize my head with that hammer?"
He studied me down his nose. "You look..." Was that red in his cheeks?
"You look like a young woman, not far from my age, but your condescension is perfected, like that of someone old."
I made a face. "What's your age?"
26. "But my youth felt so endless that perhaps I'm the exact same age as you."
He lifted one shoulder, like a full shrug was not worth the effort.
"Young and also rather old."
We stayed quiet for the rest of the crossing. Rory did not ask me about my dream or to take my shroud off again. I listened to the sound of the tenor and to the beat of our steps upon the bridge, hooves and boots, stone and feet, thinking on the stories I'd told the diviners of the things we'd do when we left Ashling, and how bare it felt, living one without them.
The Siege was a roaring instrument. By the time we'd crossed the Tenor River, it was full morning, and the city's labyrinthic streets were bustling with people. Wedged between Fig and the gargoyle, I flexed my tones over cobblestones and threw my head back as I took in the city. It was nothing like Coulson Fair, tents plopped haphazardly in rows upon an open field. The Siege, its architecture, was a meticulous wonder. Every building, by wood or stone or brick, was built to an exact stature that allowed its neighbours light. There were culverts, so no freestanding water remained in the streets. Water wheels fed into factories. I could smell leather. From open windows, I saw men and women in grey robes shuffling about large tubs or stretching a wet yellow material over large stones, then pinning it to dry. Parchment. My eyes were wide. They're making parchment. "Oh, Bartholomew," the gargoyle took my hand, "for writing stories."
"Histories, more like," Rory said. "Medical discoveries, star charts, architecture and invention. You name it, it's been scribbled on a leaflet somewhere in this city. They love that, the scribes. Learning and scribbling."
I watched a row of women through an open window as they sewed, then pressed stacks of parchment together. "You sound disapproving, Mendacious."
"Not at all. Knowledge is a wellspring, and I happily drink from it."
He scowled up at a banner of an inkwell.
"I simply can't fathom why, for all their learning, folk of the Siege still lend credence to those old, superstitious ways."
"You mean the ways you were meant to defend as a knight? My ways?" My wonderment was doused in irritation. "You think that because someone embraces innovation, they must scorn the ancient and ethereal?" Rory retrieved the scribe's golden stylus from his pocket and set it on a windowsill.
"Clearly you don't."
"You said it yourself. Two things can be true at the same time. People can believe in more than one thing at once."
"Like what is young, and also that which is rather old,"
the gargoyle offered. The streets were wriggling snakes, and so were the river channels that wove beneath bridges, each pointing toward the heart of the Siege, a bustling marketplace square. We passed more banners depicting inkwells, shops and tanneries, and tall, windowed archives. When we reached the lip of the marketplace, Rory pointed his finger over my shoulder, directing my gaze at a humble brick facade.
"I imagine your diviners came from one of those," he murmured.
I heard the sweet, unmistakable sound of children's laughter. The brick building's door was open, and from it I glimpsed hair, swinging arms, churning feet, rosy cheeks. Children, gleefully chasing one another. One of them, who seemed no older than 8, caught the open door, shut it, and I noted an inscription painted upon the wood. Pupil House 3, a school for foundlings. Oh, this was where diviners were chosen from, where 1, or 2, or 3, or 4, or 5, or I might have begun, before Ashling. I took a step toward the house. Someone stomped on my bare foot. I yelped, knocking into a short, burly man with several inkwells in his arms. Oi! Watch where you're going! I checked my shroud was still in place and muttered an apology. The man's eyes widened as he took me in. His mouth turned.
Get away from me, bitch.
The gargoyle made a shrill noise of affront and shoved the man. He tumbled onto his bottom, dropping his inkwells, which shattered on the cobbled street. Ink pooling beneath him, the man struggled to his feet, shouting profanity so decorative I didn't know what half of it meant, only that he thought me an omen witch and a whore. Rory leaned down, cracked him over the jaw with an open palm.
Watch your fucking mouth.
The man slipped on his own ink and fell a second time. When he scrutinized Rory, the charcoal around his eyes, the rings in his ear, he clearly didn't know whether to spit out another slur or flee. But the siege was indeed a city of intellects. The man raised himself out of the ink and ran. You can be happy now, I suppose, I said through tight lips. Clearly not everyone in the siege falls prey to the old ways. Rory pushed his hair out of his eyes. That didn't make me happy at all. Oh, look! A diviner! Pith. A crowd was already forming. Did someone show you their ink? A woman asked me, dragging a man who looked about 100 years old with her. Pray, diviner, will you read mine? Oh, I'm sorry, that's not how it would... More onlookers pushed forward, and suddenly there were 2, 3, 4 more inkwells in my face. Read my ink! Please, diviner, what signs do you see? Good or bad? I was jostled, my bare feet trampled, and then a warm arm was around my shoulders, and I was being moved through the crowd, through the marketplace, far quicker than before. And to think, Rory said in my ear, it might have all been avoided had you been wearing shoes. The Siege's streets narrowed as we turned east. The crowd was thinner here, dispersed. I noted the exact moment when, just ahead, 2 figures slunk from an alley. They walked close to each other, the hoods of their cloaks pulled up like mine. Rory watched them, a crooked smile slithering over his mouth. Well, well. He retracted his arm from my shoulders and pressed ahead. Soon, he was directly behind the hooded figures, walking on silent step, reaching a hand into one of their cloaks like a common pickpocket. I balked. What are you doing, Mendacious? One of the figures turned. I saw a sharp face fitted with green eyes with charcoal drawn around them. Maud. She caught Rory by the wrist, denying him her pocket.
Nice try, little thief.
Rory looked at me like he'd picked me out from between his teeth.
Spoil sport.
The second figure, who turned on his heel, was none other than the King of Traum himself. When King Castor saw Rory, he smiled so widely I could count his teeth.
We found him, Rory. He was hiding in plain sight. We followed him, and...
The king stopped short, his eyes finally catching up to his mouth.
Oh, a diviner!
His cheeks went ruddy.
My diviner!
6, I reminded him. It would have been proper to lower my head, but the boy was in common garb, leathers and an undyed cloak. He looked so ordinary, I forgot he mattered enough to bow to.
I am here too, Bartholomew, the gargoyle said, clearing his throat. You may greet me as well.
Maud went still.
Pith,
she muttered. I didn't know gargoyles spoke. Who's Bartholomew? The king asked. Unimportant. Rory's posture had changed. He wasn't slouched or lazy or perked for enjoyment. His back was stiff, his shoulders inflexible.
You found him, and you were going after him without me.
Who? I snapped. They turned, six eyes combing me. They were like the three leaves of a clover, conspiratorial and exclusive in their trio. There was an ardent pause, then Rory looked at Maud, said something to her with the wiggle of his eyebrows. Maud shook her head. No. I crossed my arms. No what? Rory scratched his jaw and ignored me.
It's a two birds, one stone situation.
It's risky and thoughtless, Maud bit back.
My specialties.
I was going to break something with my hammer if these idiots didn't stop acting like I wasn't there. King Castor looked from me to Rory to Maud, then back to me. Slowly, he shrugged. I say we bring her. She could be useful. The gargoyle puffed his chest out with pride.
Bartholomew is a daughter of Ashling, a harbinger of gods, the most dedicated dreamer I know.
He patted my shoulder.
But no, I'm sorry to say she is not especially useful. I, on the other hand...
I put my hand over his mouth. Whatever you are doing, I will come along. But immediately after, I require your ear, King Castor. I tried to be like the abbess when she was cross, like Ashling Cathedral itself, cold, beautiful, and disapproving. And I will have it. The king grinned.
Ear, eye, hand, they're yours. Easy, your majesty.
Rory threw an arm over the king's shoulder, steering him away from me.
It's hardly a marriage proposal. Now, he gestured to the street ahead. Let's go see an old friend.
Maud was not pleased. I could tell by the way she censured Rory, with relentless glares, as she led us down dizzying streets, that she did not want me along for whatever ill adventure lay ahead. Too bad. I wasn't letting the boy king out of my sight until he promised he would help me find my diviners. We stopped abruptly in an ivy-laden alley that was almost too narrow for Fig. Maud looked over her shoulder. Satisfied we were alone, she began peeling back the ivy, revealing a small wooden door in the alley wall.
Right.
She turned to me. We need to go over a few things before we bring you in. In? I looked up at the ivy wall. It didn't look like a barracks, or anywhere the knighthood might be stationed. Where, exactly?
We're meeting with someone, Maud said flatly. A vestige of the siege.
I crossed my arms. You're being cryptic. It's obnoxious.
Hey.
Rory tapped my wrist.
Uncross those and listen. There's a chance this man knows something of your lost diviners. Seeing him may be a bit of a shock, but it's important that you see him. Understood?
Understood, Bartholomew.
The gargoyle straightened.
I will strive to be a pillar of decorum. You will stay with Fig.
When the gargoyle's bottom lip began to quiver, Rory hastily added,
She gets lonely.
The gargoyle looked up at Fig, who was contentedly eating ivy off the wall, and sniffled.
Very well. If my presence will ease her suffering, I shall weather my own.
Fantastic. Rory's dark eyes returned to me.
Our business may get... animated. Stay close.
My brows shot up. Animated how?
Will there be kissing?
The gargoyle asked.
What? No.
Rory made a face. We're going to... He turned to Maud for help, but she offered none, grinning as he struggled to articulate.
We are taking up the mantle and challenging this man to his craft, King Castor said, then blinked rapidly, as if surprised by his own exactitude.
He looked to Maud, who patted him on the back, then focused on me.
Do you know what that means, Six?
I didn't. It sounded vaguely familiar. a memory stuck in a dark corner of my mind. But my pride was a formidable beast. I'd sooner go back to Ashling than give these idiots another cause to think me witless and unworldly. Of course. I could see in the way they looked at one another that they thought me a prodigiously bad liar. Maud wrenched open the alleyway door, revealing a dark corridor.
Then let's go.
King Castor followed, quick in his step, like he did not want to stray too far from Maud. I handed the gargoyle my hammer and chisel for safekeeping. You still haven't told me this man's name, I said to Rory, stepping over a fractured wood threshold into the corridor.
He'll be more than happy to introduce himself.
Rory shut the door behind him, expelling the echo of the siege and the gargoyle's voice as he began to lecture Fig about varying sorts of ivy. The only thing I could hear now was the muffled patter of our steps on wool rugs. I peered at the surrounding walls, their height so vast I had to crane my neck. Upon them, obscured by dimness, were rows of elaborate paintings I could not make out. They looked like portraits with blurry faces, bent, unclothed bodies. No lanterns were lit. The corridor stretched on, its end obscured by murky shadow. I walked behind the king, a step ahead of Rory, suddenly afraid I was being heedlessly led into the unknown. Ahead, Maud's and King Castor's backs were rigid. Behind, I could hear the swish of Rory's fidgeting fingers in his pocket. He was toying with his coin. An anxious habit, perhaps. His steps were unflagging, but his breaths were rough and uneven. You lot seem tense, I murmured. Nervous about something mendacious? The fidgeting sounds stopped.
Do you have some moral compunction against saying my name?
Is mendacious not your name?
I told you the night we met to call me Rory.
And I might have, but then we got to talking, and suddenly there was nothing about you that made me want to encourage familiarity.
Job well done. Vomiting on my favourite boots is a surefire way to keep things formal between us.
I glared back at him. You're remarkably difficult to like.
You'd like me better if you called me Rory.
I'd like you better if you were on your back again. He smiled. An unfamiliar heat burrowed into my face. From throwing you and your inferior strength down, obviously.
Loud and clear, Diviner. I hear you loud and clear.
A line of light drew before us, coming from the cracks in a wide oaken door at the end of the corridor. Maud put a hand upon it and pressed. The door opened to a room with no windows, lit by sunlight cascading from a dome ceiling made entirely out of glass. Upon the walls, several stories high, were shelves stacked with books. Tens of thousands of books. In the heart of the room, fixed upon fine woolen rugs, was a man. An old man, with draping silken robes and long, gnarled fingers. He stood stooped, but his eyes were lifted. Lifted and made entirely out of stone. In his hand was the inkwell from my dreams. He stared at me, drawing in a long, rasping breath.
A daughter of Ashling.
He lifted a hand, beckoning me.
Come in.
Chapter 11. The Harried Scribe. Denying. Every part of me was caught up, denying. This can't... My voice carried up, and the glass ceiling threw it back. This can't... My echo mocked. This can't... The old man peered at me through stone eyes. His hands were thin, with bulbous joints, the undersides of his fingernails ink-stained. He had no hair upon his head or face, no colour in his sunken cheeks. He said nothing, slowly running a finger through his inkpot as he stared at me.
Don't be an ass.
Maud elbowed the king. Tell her who he is. King Castor gave a shaky laugh.